The Children's War by Jock Phillips, Part 2. Empire Pride. The government was especially keen that children receive short lessons on the history of the empire and their duties to it. In many ways, this was the kind of material the school journal had always contained. During the war, children read about how New Zealand joined the British Empire through the Treaty of Waitangi. They were reminded that the empire covered a quarter of the Earth's surface and contained a quarter of the world's people. They learned about other children in the British Empire, in Canada, Australia, South Africa, and India. This was to make readers feel part of one big empire family. New Zealand children were also encouraged to love England, the motherland. The journal contained poems that expressed this idea, like Robert Browning's "Oh, to be in England now that April's here," and Rupert Brooke's poem "The Soldier," published in the journal a few months after he died in 1915. "If I should die, think only this of me, that there's some corner of a foreign field that is forever England." One of the most important lessons was for children to think of themselves as future heroes. Who knew when the war would end, and when another generation of soldiers would be needed? In 1917, when the New Zealand soldiers were dying at Mens and Passchendaele, the journal asked children, "Now, what can you do for your empire?" The answer was to learn all you can of the brave men and women who made the empire great and try to be like them. So the journal published articles about British explorers like David Livingstone, naval heroes like Lord Nelson, and the great English navigator James Cook. It also followed the adventures of Ernest Shackleton, whose team's perilous journey to Antarctica began in 1914. Shackleton was the perfect example of a contemporary empire hero, courageous, resilient, and self-sacrificing. Little Crusaders. The empire expects every child this day to do his or her duty, Lord Nelson quoted in the school journal. Children were expected to help with the war in practical ways too, not just read about it. They knitted scarves and socks, stitched handkerchiefs, and wrote cheerful letters, all of which that were sent to the soldiers. Children were also expected to make sacrifices. The Secretary of Education was quick to suggest this when, in the second month of the war, his ideas about money for war ambulances were published in the school journal. Any sums offered should be donations from the children themselves and not from the parents. Or, if a parent called upon to help for the moment, the child should deny himself or herself some pleasure or make some sacrifice until the parent is repaid. In this way, the secretary believed that the gift would be truly noble. New Zealand children were indeed noble when it came to the war effort. In 1916, they raised £18,300, about $2 million today, by collecting glass bottles. These were worth a lot of money during the war because they were in short supply. The money from selling the bottles was sent to the poor children of Belgium, whose suffering received a lot of attention during the war. Children also raised funds for the Red Cross, an organisation that supported hospitals and soldiers during the war. To get this money, they collected bottles and scrap iron, performed in patriotic concerts, sold pet lambs, and saved their pocket money. Near the end of the war, copper trails became popular, In 1918, Auckland challenged Wellington to build a trail of copper pennies along the main trunk line. School children along the way took part, and the trail's progress was reported in the newspaper. While fundraising brought in a lot of money, it also taught wartime values. As the journal noted in 1918, children were learning to serve others. They were also learning the lesson of thrift, which our empire tells us will help to win the war. Bravo, little crusaders! Fit for war. Finally, children were taught that it was good to be fit and healthy, on the inside as well as the outside. Being fit meant that they were ready to serve their country. Boys from the age of 14 did compulsory military training, and many high schools had cadet force, in which boys learned a soldier's skills. From 1914, every school had to teach a certain number of hours of physical education. Children were also given lessons in morality, including stern warnings about the dangers of alcohol and cigarettes. Soldiers of the future could not afford to have vices. And at home, while their mothers were sad and anxious over absent soldier fathers and brothers, children were instructed to be busy and cheerful, truthful and obedient. Being hard-working and good would help to win the war. Remembering. The First World War had a profound impact on New Zealanders. Around 42,000 of our soldiers were injured and 18,000 died. This was a casualty rate of over 50%, one of the highest of any country in the British Empire. Most New Zealand soldiers were buried on the battlefields of Europe, Gallipoli, and the Middle East, distant places most relatives would never visit. So to commemorate their dead, almost every community built a war memorial. Many were on the main street, where they couldn't be missed. Some memorials were the traditional obelisk, a stone pillar that points to the sky. Others showed the figure of a soldier. Memorials also took the form of school gates, community halls, bridges, and arches. Eventually, more than 500 public memorials were built around New Zealand. To see some of them and to learn more about the First World War, go to www.nzhistory.net.nz.